Your Financial Choices may discuss various financial-related topics and thus would like to offer the following disclosures. Lori Siebert is employed by Valley National Group, the Valley National Financial Advisors Group of Companies. Investments are offered through Valley National Investments Incorporated, member FINRA. We inform you that any federal tax, state tax, financial advice, or information contained in this communication is not intended to be personalized or specific in nature, or to be relied upon for your personal situation in any circumstance. The advice and information are not intended and cannot be used as a tax opinion letter, nor used for the purpose of avoiding tax-related penalties. For personalized advice specific to your own situation, we recommend that you consult your CPA, CFP, or attorney.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. I am a CPA, CFP, and AEP on the web at yourfinancialchoices.com. And you can listen online each and every week at wdiy.org. Today is September 26, 2018. The markets were down today. The Dow closing at 26,385, the NASDAQ at 7,990, and the S&P at 2,905. Our topic tonight is somewhat narrow, so I might have some listeners who might not think it applies to them, but maybe you know someone that it might apply to, and you could share the opportunity to check out podcast on WDIY, which we have there on the website, wdiy.org, under local programming, and just looking for your financial choices. And the topic tonight is qualified business income deduction. And I'm actually only going to be able to touch on this probably a little bit because it's that complicated. So really, the show tonight is going to apply to people who may already be in business, have a business, thinking about starting a business, and how this might apply to you. And it can be very simple or very complicated. So it's called a new deduction called qualified business income deduction. So I'm going to talk about that, but within the framework of understanding what kind of businesses people have, to give you a little structure to it before we delve into the intricacies of what it all means. We are live tonight. We'll take your questions. Lori C is in the studio and we'll answer your calls, take your information, and we ask you to mute your radio so you can hear me without the delay and we can talk without confusion. We discuss general financial planning topics and not specific investments. And while I typically have a topic each week, you can still ask questions off topic and I will do my best to answer them. The number is 610-758-8810, and you can talk live on air with me, or if you're not comfortable talking live on air, just give your question to Lori. She'll write it down and bring it into the studio. Email is also available through the website yourfinancialchoices.com. So as I mentioned, qualified business income deduction. So first, let's talk about business income in its many forms. What does a business look like? And I do want to mention, as we had on probably a couple months ago, representatives from the organization Lehigh Valley SCORE on the show talking about how they mentor people who are either in business, starting up a business, transitioning a business. They mentor folks and they run periodic seminars. And I noticed that they have one coming up on October 20th. It's a Saturday, and it's called Simple Steps for Starting Your Business. So I thought that could, you know, play into listeners who might be thinking about starting up a business. That might have some helpful hints. And then they also have another one, October 26th, Access to Capital and the 5 C's of Credit. So sometimes people are thinking about starting up a business, but they may not think they have the capital to start up a business. So those seminars that they're putting on kind of go together. And I think that's nice. But they have more information on their website. And you have to be careful how you type their website, because there's another name without a period in it, and you get a completely different website. So it's lehighvalley.score.org if you want more information on those seminars they have coming up. So let's talk for a minute about when we talk about businesses, what does that mean? And I'm going to be referencing a couple different resources I have. One is a something called a quick finder that we use when we're doing tax preparation. And it has a lot of good information in it, some general information. So I'm going to be referencing that, a great publication. And I also am going to be referencing some information that I picked up on a webinar I was on this afternoon, in fact, about this very subject, qualified business income deduction. So first, let's talk about businesses. There's different types of entities that one could establish if they are going into a trade or business. I think most of us have an idea of what a trade or business is. Basically, you have a product or a service you want to sell to some audience or the public, whereby you make money on what it is you're selling, and hopefully after expenses and deductions, you have a profit. So trade or business, you want to enter into to make money, to have income. And in deciding what kind of structure you want to have when you have this business, quite often, and how this probably evolved over time, was, hey, if I have a business, this is great. I want to sell this service, but you know, I'm a little worried because maybe it's building buildings. Maybe I want to build skyscrapers, and I realize I'm going to need employees to do that. I'm going to. It could be a very risk-taking venture with people, you know, climbing 100-story buildings. So all of a sudden that evolved into, this isn't just me having a business. Maybe I have some risk that might be involved. Maybe I have employees. Maybe I have a product that could, you know, be faulty and, you know, open us up to lawsuits or something. So then people started saying, well, if I am just myself and I have this business, I might need some protection, some liability protection. So all different kinds of entities have evolved. Maybe all of a sudden you say, hey, I can't do this by myself. I have this other person who's going to help me. We're going to partner up. Or my business has taken off so much, I'm not just a sole proprietor anymore. Now I have all these employees. It's getting really big and I need all these other people to help me. Maybe it makes more sense to have more structure around my company. Maybe I want my company to be an ongoing entity. So all kinds of different structures. So at the simplest form, we talk about going into business for ourselves, it would be a proprietorship. We're self-employed. So these mean the same thing, proprietorship, self-employed. Typically, when we're self-employed, we report our income on a Schedule C, which goes with our tax return, the federal 1040. So that Schedule C is our sole proprietor, and that's where we report our income and our deductions and our expenses. And it's easy to form, simple to operate, easy to sell assets, fewer administrative burdens, all taxation to the owner. So that's the proprietorship. QuickFinder goes on to point out some of the disadvantages. Limited source of capital, so you're relying on yourself. No limited liability for the owner. If I'm just a proprietor and I haven't put myself in a shell of a corporation or some type of entity, I have unlimited liability, basically, so no limited liability, no continuity past the proprietor. That could run into issues if you are someone who has your own business and your family was relying on that income and you're doing really, really well, but then you pass away and there's no one to carry on the business. Sometimes you might be licensed to perform some service that no one else would have, and then all of that history you've built up and clientele or whatever it might be, those services you were providing, there's no one there to continue to provide them. So no continuity past the proprietor. So that sometimes comes into play from an estate planning standpoint. And all the net income is subject to self-employment tax. And self-employment tax, for those people who don't realize what that is, it's really the Social Security tax. As employees of a company, when we get a W-2, we get wages, we look at our pay stub, we look at our W-2, we see that they've taken taxes out of our pay a little bit for FICA tax and old age security, OASDI. So there's two pieces to the Social Security tax, and that's the Social Security element to it and the Medicare element to it. So there's two pieces to it. And when we're employed, we pay our part of it, and the employer pays part of it. So we're both bearing the cost of that equally. When we are self-employed, as a self-employed person, because I have no employer, I'm self-employed, we have to pay both sides of it. So it's a little bit extra expense for us. So all net income is subject to self-employment tax. So that's kind of Schedule C sole proprietor. When I come back from the break, I'm going to just go through some of the other kind of business entities that we have. And this is all leading up to what is business income, qualified business income, to get us a deduction on our tax return when we're self-employed. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. Back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including fee-based asset management. It all starts with personal goals and an understanding of risk tolerance, investment objectives, and the markets. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Not only is becoming a WDIY member a great way to support the programs you love, it has its benefits. WDIY members have access to our weekly member ticket giveaway emails. Discover great concerts, theater performances, film screenings, and more, all while supporting the many choices and real voices on WDIY. Make your gift today at 610-694-8100 extension 7 or wdiy.org. Thank you.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. Tonight we are talking about qualified business income deduction. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810, and we are taking questions live on air. Or if you're not comfortable talking live on air, just give your question to Lori C. She'll write it down and bring it into the studio. So to set up the framework for what we're talking about for this huge change, this is a really big change for people who have business income, trade or business income. In 2018, this concept of qualified business income deduction. So we're talking about the different kind of businesses that might be impacted by this. We just talked about a sole proprietorship, a Schedule C that's being self-employed. We can also be self-employed through a partnership. As I mentioned, maybe you get going and then you decide you and your buddy need to, you know, do this together. Maybe that's a way to get an infusion of capital as well. Maybe you've got the great idea and your friend has the money and you decide to form a partnership. So a partnership does have more sources of capital, more management resources, still less administrative burdens than a corporation. It is called a pass-through entity. It's the tax implications of the partnership pass through to the partners. Limited partners have limited liability and no self-employment tax. That's limited partners. It's typically when we're talking about a partnership in a business, generally, you've got probably general partners. When we're looking at limited partners, typically we're seeing investments where it's, I think like Buckeye or something like that. Limited partners who aren't really making any management decisions is just an investment for them. So in what I'm talking about tonight, I'm talking about partnerships in the sense of being self-employed, basically. With partnerships, some of the disadvantages: transfer of interest is more difficult, each general partner is personally liable, general partner's net income is subject to self-employment tax, just like I mentioned the sole proprietor is, and there are some complexity of partnership tax rules, and it's a flow-through activity. So similar to the self-employed person, for any kind of business, you're still tracking all the same kind of income and you're keeping track of all the deductions and expenditures you have. So you're still accounting for that. It's just where it gets reported. So the sole proprietor, Schedule C with your 1040 partnership, has a separate tax return. All of that gets reported on the partnership tax return. And then it flows through the bottom line kind of transactions from that flow through to the partner on a Schedule K-1. We also have another form of business called an S corporation. This is basically a corporation that has elected this S corporate status to be treated as a pass-through entity so that still reporting all the income and the deductions like they would for any other business on their own tax return at 1120S, but the income is passing through to the shareholders instead of being taxed at the corporate level. Because recall, corporations have profits they pay corporate tax on, but then they could be paying out dividends to their shareholders who then also pay tax on that. So S corporations avoid that double taxation. Owners have limited liability. Individual tax rates may be lower than the applicable corporate rates. And distributions from S corporations are exempt from payroll taxes. So what happens with an S corporation, though, as a shareholder, I'm an employee of that S corporation typically, and I get a W-2. So the S corporation is still giving me a W-2, but it has to be fair wages, etc. But if that S corporation does really, really awesome and there's extra money in the S corporation, be after all the wages and after all the expenses, they pass out the profit to the shareholders, their allocable share, that comes through a K-1. That's the pass-through part. And that pass-through part is not subject to self-employment tax because that's in essence kind of what they think of as the profit. So that's an S corporation. There's other disadvantages to S corporations, limits on the shareholder, lack of tax-free fringe benefits to greater than 2% shareholder employees. Individual tax rates on the pass-through income may be higher than the applicable corporate rates because maybe the individual that they pass the income out is in a high income tax bracket. So there's always going to be some advantages and some disadvantages to both. Quite often I'll tell people when you're starting up a business, maybe you want to take the first stab as a sole proprietor because to incorporate, you're going to hire legal counsel, you're going to have articles of incorporation or partnership agreements that should be written up. What else has to be done to protect or limit your liability? So lots of counsel is needed in those circumstances, but maybe you're not even sure this is going to take off. You might want to start with a Schedule C sole proprietor, but then you might be open to legal liability. So what else could you do? There is something called a limited liability company. And a limited liability company is all members have limited liability. Last I heard, I think this still was not tested in court, but I don't know that for sure to now as of today. But there's no limit on the number or types of members. You can elect to either pass through taxation under partnership rules if there's more than one owner or S corporation rules or to even be treated as a C corporation. Members may participate in management and there's different classes of ownership. So as I mentioned, this limited liability company is kind of like a wrapper or a shell around any of these types of entities to try to give you further protections from personal liability. And a limited liability, they call it a check the box kind of election, where a limited liability company can be a C corp, a partnership, or an S corp. So you have to have some other of those underlying traits that I already talked about, but you can still be a limited liability company. And sometimes I think people think, you know, when they're talking, they'll say, oh, I'm an LLC, and they think they're a corporation, but it's a limited liability company, again, to try to add that extra protection. Some of the disadvantages may have a limited life, transferability of interest may be limited, LLC laws vary from state to state. So, you know, bottom line, kind of understanding what options there are out there for you. If you're thinking about starting a business, a trader business, it would behoove you to work with an attorney and probably a tax accountant to make sure that you have the protections and, you know, limit the liability as needed. Generally, if I have someone who's going to be a Schedule C sole proprietor, I like them to talk to their insurance agent to see, do they have umbrella insurance? Do they have the proper kind of insurance that will help them in whatever kind of business they might be venturing into. So those are kind of the different forms of business. Why is this? And the C-Corp, of course, is they can raise any amount of capital. Owners have limited liability. Corporations can have perpetual life, ease of transferability of stock, more management resources. But again, those earnings are subject to double taxation. There's administrative burdens, just certain things with C-Corps. Why we need to know that is because when we come back from this next break, C-Corps don't qualify for this qualified business income deduction. So understanding what kind of businesses there are, what kind of protections you might need, but knowing that any of these other forms might still qualify for this qualified business income deduction is important to know. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. We'll be back in just a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including income tax preparation for individuals, businesses, estates, and trusts. Tax preparation involves more than putting numbers on a return. It requires planning. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
American folk music offers a variegated pattern of performers and styles. I'm Tom Druckenmiller, your host for In the Tradition. Together, we'll trace the roots and branches of American folk music from the earliest recordings and performers through today's talented players. In the Tradition, Wednesday evening from 7 to 9 p.m. on WDIY 88.1 FM and WDIY.org.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You are listening to Your Financial Choices, and tonight we are talking about qualified business income deduction. This is especially important, obviously, for people who carry on a trader business and have business income and may not have heard about this in the recent tax. It's TJCA. I don't even know what it stands for anymore. The Tax Jobs Cut Act or something. Maybe it's TCJA, Tax Cut Job Act. Anyway, this recent change in the tax law, which is to promote business and probably business investment, includes something that we have not had before called a qualified business income deduction. And I have to tell you, it is very hard to get your arms around all of this. It can be quite complicated. So we started off the show by talking about the different kinds of business entities. And might I mention as well that if this new benefit sends a flag up the flagpole to say, hey, looks great. I think I'm going to start saying I have a business, and everyone starts going into business. I just want to stress about doing it the proper way. So it's not just about the entity that you're choosing to operate under for your business. It's also about record keeping. It's also about a profit motive. So the IRS expects you to have a profit motive. They're looking at certain criteria if you're ever audited to see if indeed you are setting yourself up for business. And there's, I think, 10 typical steps they look for. I think I found those on the small business website. I can't recall what it is right away, but it might be setting up an employer identification number for your business. Like individuals have social security numbers, your business could use an employer identification number for bank accounts, setting up a separate bank account, setting up a website. There are just a number of criteria to go through to say, have you in fact set up a trade or business and are in the business of business. So you want to look at keeping good records, setting up that bank account, as I mentioned, but to track all the income coming in and the expenses going out. You don't want to mix them. Sometimes if the IRS sees you putting $1,000 a month in your business bank account, they will think that that is business income. If you say, oh no, I just decided to put my $1,000 dividends in that bank account, they might think that's your business income. So you really need to find a way to kind of keep it separate. So keep good track of your records and tracking all of that. Okay, so now let's go to talking about this qualified business income deduction. It really is going to be a little bit too complicated to get into all the nuances of it, but I thought if we broadly discussed it for anyone who is listening tonight who might be a business owner themselves or have family members or friends who are business owners who have not started looking at this, it's really, really important to raise awareness and to do some planning before year end. So this qualified business income deduction, what is it and what do we know about it? It's a deduction, and it could be a big deduction, and it can be very complicated or quite simple, depending on a number of hurdles that you might have to get over. And right now we're dealing with proposed regulations to this Tax Cut Jobs Act change where they put this in, but there was so much confusion around it. People were, you know, left not understanding what they meant. How do you do it? How do you calculate it? What does it mean? What is business income? Who does it apply to? That they had to come out with some proposed regulations to help clarify it. They're not the final regulations. They expect that there's still going to be more to follow, but the proposed regulations were light years ahead of the original, the original legislation. So some of this still may change, but this did provide some additional guidance. And basically, and for probably most mom and pop business owners, I could say that the qualified business income deduction is basically a 20% deduction based on your qualified business income. So they use the word qualified to make sure that people understand what is qualified business income. And there's certain definitions around that. For the sake of the time of the show, I'm just going to say basically, you know, you're in a business to make a profit. It's trade or business income. We're going to call your profit on your business the qualified business income for my purposes today. So you think, oh, that sounds not too bad, Lori. Why are you making such a big deal about this? Well, the 20% deduction for qualified business income, that sounds pretty easy to calculate, but that's just way, way too simple for how we do things. And they had to include a bunch of limitations, and the limitations include or apply to people over certain income limitations and for certain types of business. So now if you're thinking, okay, the 20% I could understand. Now we're talking about, wait, certain income limitations, certain types of business. Wow, did everything just get thrown out the door? Well, no, not exactly. So now let's talk about those a little bit more. So the 20% deduction for qualified business income is what I would call the first threshold. So that's pretty easy. But then the next thing the IRS said, well, 20% of your business income would be your deduction. But what if you had all these other deductions on your return, like retirement plan contributions, Schedule A itemized deductions, such that you had no taxable income? Well, if you have no taxable income, then in essence, you don't need that that qualified business income deduction then either. But what if you do have some taxable income? Let's say your business income was $100,000. 20% of that would be $20,000. But let's pretend your taxable income was only $40,000. Well, the IRS said 20% of your business income is going to be the deduction. That's the 20. But they're not going to let you take more than 20% of your taxable income. So if my taxable income is $40,000 after all my deductions times 20%, that would only be an $8,000 deduction. And one thing we have to have our kind of alert ears on for this. When people are generally, in the past, we would talk about certain deductions or certain credits. We have gotten so used to talking about adjusted gross income. That's your page one income. But if you heard me, you heard that this second limitation is 20% of your taxable income. That's a very different number than we're used to dealing with. So things could really change. So these are just the first two pieces. It gets way more complicated. If you have questions, you're welcome to try calling 610-758-8810, 610-758-8810. We can take your questions live on air or off air. But at the same time, give me a little time. I'm going to go through this in a little bit more detail, and we'll see if we can answer some of the questions that might have your head spinning right now, because as I mentioned, it still gets more complicated. 610-758-8810. We'll be back in just a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including estate planning and tax preparation, especially for Pennsylvania and New Jersey residents subject to state inheritance tax reporting. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
This is WDIY. It's 6:30. Your current temperature is 81. Tonight, we're going to have some storms. Could be severe with damaging wind and heavy rain. Low around 56. Thursday, partly sunny with a high near 68. Thursday night, possible a thunderstorm after midnight with a low around 56. For your weekend, starting off Friday, a chance of rain, mostly cloudy with a high near 68. Friday night, partly cloudy with a low around 56. Saturday, mostly sunny with a high near 70. Saturday night, low around 49. Sunday, mostly sunny with a high near 68. And Sunday night, partly cloudy with a low around 5. Now, back to your financial choices with Lori Siebert.
Thank you, Shandi. Welcome back, folks. If you have questions, we are talking about qualified business income deduction tonight. The number is 610-758-8810. You can talk to me live on air or off air, whatever you're more comfortable doing. I understand this topic is very narrow for people in business, but what I expect to see is more of people who might have thought about going into business might go into business now, realizing that they might have a little bit of a break on the taxes as they venture into this. So I think it's important to understand it if you are in business now, or if you're thinking about doing it, just so that you can understand all the implications. From a very, very easy standpoint, a lot of people are going to qualify for this if you're in business. A lot of people will, because the majority of people are under certain income thresholds. And I'm going to talk about those certain income thresholds in a minute. But basically, that deduction is going to be 20% of your qualified business income, or lower if your taxable, if 20% of your taxable income is lower. So you can't take more than 20% of your taxable income. So that's a further limitation. There's some planning around that, which I think I'm going to set aside until I go through some of these other limitations. But you'll realize why you need to know these things if you're a business owner, because it could really impact what you're deciding to do as far as funding retirement accounts or buying that extra piece of equipment. You know, certain decisions that you might be making in your business that this will impact. So the other, lots of limitations, it just kind of keeps going. So another limitation is triggered if the income is, if your taxable income is over certain thresholds. And depending on what kind of business you have, and whether they've identified it as a service or a non-service business. So I'll go into more on that in a minute. I have a caller on line one. We have Nate from Kutztown. Hi, Nate.
How are you?
Good. How can I help you?
So I just had a question that came across my mind. So you mentioned if you have taxable income of, say, zero, you don't have any taxable income.
Right.
but you have qualified business income.
Yep.
And you get a deduction for that, right?
If you have qualified business income and you're below all these other, you know, income thresholds, and if you have zero taxable income, I would expect you would be. So normally you would have this qualified business income deduction, but if you have taxable income, a zero taxable income, then there is no deduction because you have zero taxable income. You don't need the deduction.
Okay. Can you defer that deduction?
No, I haven't seen that, and I haven't seen that you carry forward any of the business income, but I did learn today that if you have a loss, the loss carries forward, Nate. So let's pretend you had a loss on your business this year, so you didn't need the deduction, and next year you have a profit of $100,000.
Right.
It would actually be reduced by the loss that you had in the current year. So it's interesting to me that they make you carry forward the loss, but you don't, I think, get to do anything with the income. But what I would say, Nate, and this is where the planning comes in, if you're someone who has zero taxable income, but you do have some qualified business income, you might want to see if putting more income on your return would help give you that deduction. And what I mean by that is sometimes what if you put in, because the income doesn't have to be more business income. You could put more income on your return by doing an IRA conversion. You could put convert an IRA to a Roth. So let's pretend you put $20,000 more on your return and now you have taxable income of $20,000.
Mm-hmm.
And so now it's going to be the lower of 20% of your qualified business income or 20% of your taxable income. So if your taxable income's 20% of that is $4,000, now I have a $4,000 deduction. So as long as your business income was at least, you know, 20% of that, you might still get a deduction. And now you just converted a $20,000 IRA at probably hardly any tax because your tax brackets might be very low at those rates. So that's where you kind of have to start playing with, do I put more income on my return to get the benefit of that deduction?
Wow.
It's a little tricky, but,
yeah.
And there's certain, you know, on this, I was on a 4-hour webinar today and they talk about inflection points and it's like, what? Inflection points? It's where you figure out the exact amount of money you need on your return to like benefit from these deductions.
Wow.
So it could get a little tricky, but that is something to think about and you're asking the right kinds of questions. So,
awesome.
Meet with your tax advisor and ask them if they can help you kind of project that out for the end of the year. Maybe you delay, you know, buying a piece of equipment or something like that too, or don't put money in your retirement account or put it into a Roth instead of some other kind of retirement account. There are a number of things you can do.
Hmm.
Okay.
Okay.
Well, thank you for calling
you.
In. I appreciate it.
Yeah. Thanks for having me.
Okay. Bye-bye. This does get complicated and there's so many moving parts actually that making a decision in one area without seeing all those next pieces could be detrimental. So you want to be careful. And as I mentioned, if you have a business loss, and let's pretend the next year you're going to be counting on this business deduction, you have to make sure that you're keeping track of that business loss. Another item that people need to be keeping track of, which I'll get to in just a minute, are any capital assets that you're buying. Because some of these limitations that I haven't even gotten into yet, the really, really complicated ones, may be impacted by the investments you've made in, you know, property and equipment, capital expenditures. They have a name that they're using. Where is it? I'll have to find it. But when we look at all of these future limitations, if income is over certain thresholds or the taxable income is over certain thresholds, one of the other limitations will factor in W-2 wages that you pay employees and or how much you've spent on capital assets in the past 10 years, Well, some people don't even keep track of those depreciation schedules if they've expensed something. So if you expensed a piece of equipment 4 years ago and you kind of let it drop off your schedule, not thinking, oh, you needed it, you expensed it, you need to make sure you're keeping track of what those capital assets are that you invested in, because that might factor into these computations. So let me kind of go back to the simplest form, 20% of your qualified business income, limited to 20% of your taxable income. Then what if, though, you're certain over certain thresholds? So the IRS says, yeah, that's the typical deduction, folks. If you're taxable income, again, we're not talking about adjusted gross income. I think we're talking about taxable income, different threshold than we're used to seeing. I think it's taxable income. So much to know. If it's under $315,000, those limitations are going to be pretty good. If your income, married filing joint, by the way, married filing joint, $315,000. If you're single, I think it's, or any other filing status, is it's about half that. So if you are between $315,000 and $415,000, we're in a phase out range and certain other limitations apply. If you're over $415,000, you might be phased out completely depending on what kind of business you have. Oh my gosh, my brain is about to explode. It just gets more complicated. So if you're, but now I'm going to make it simpler. So if you're under $315,000, we're pretty good with those 20% of your qualified business income as a deduction and or 20% of taxable income, the lower of those two. That's fairly easy. If you're over $415,000 and you're a service business, you're considered a service business, you don't get anything. There's no deduction. Oh my gosh. So now we have to talk about a service business. But if your income's not over $415,000, your taxable income, folks, taxable income is not over $415,000, you know, it's not going to matter anyway. So if you're under $315,000, it doesn't matter what kind of, if you're a service business or a non-service business, it doesn't matter if you're under $315,000. And recall that I said, you know, taxable income, it's not just your business income. So you might make $20,000 in your business. And if your spouse makes $500,000, you're over the threshold. If you're in a service business, then you don't get a deduction. If you're in a non-service deduction, you are now over the threshold. This threshold, and different rules apply. It's no longer the 20%. There's other rules that apply. So it can be very complicated. Let me talk for a minute about what a service business is, because this is where, if you know you're a service business and you know you're over those income thresholds, then it's not going to apply. Although you may be able to do some planning and get yourself under those thresholds to now apply, you know, now to have some type of credit apply. But the service business, it's very interesting. And this is where there's going to be the most confusion going forward. People understanding what a service business is, even people in the accounting industry are struggling with this when clients are asking what is considered a service business, because it includes certain specified businesses such as consulting. Wow, that could be very, very broad. Consulting. A lot of people are going to not admit to be consultants anymore. So we don't know exactly what that will mean. Consulting, law, lawyers, accounting, CPAs. But guess what? It also includes bookkeepers and paralegals. So people in those industries, it's not just lawyers, it's not just accountants, it's people in those industries. But there's even offshoots of that. Like maybe you're someone, they gave us an example, healthcare industry is called a service industry. But if, for example, a vet is in the service industry, but if that vet also provides kennels and sells collars and dog food, that is not service. So that vet may have to segregate those businesses. But then there's all kinds of rules around that. So basically, the services specified businesses include consulting, law, accounting, healthcare, brokerage. Well, there's real estate brokers, right? But guess what? Real estate brokers aren't included in this. It's particularly brokerage of securities. It does not include insurance brokers. It does not include real estate agents. And licensing is not relevant. So you can't look to see if someone's licensed or not to determine if they're in a service. Where the principal asset is the skill or reputation of one or more of the employees, that indicates service. They carved out some extra people. Architects and engineers are excluded from the service business. And I don't know why they explained it. I didn't understand it. Architects and engineers are excluded. So consulting, bottom line, is professional advice and counsel to assist the client to achieve goals and solve problems. That's the guide for what a consultant is. So there are going to be a lot of people who will not, who will fall under the service element of trader business, and they're the ones that if they're over the threshold, the deduction's gone. For anybody else who's in those non-service professions, additional limitations apply. And we'll talk about that when we get back. The phone number is 610-758-8810. Back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services including portfolio management, tax return preparation, and financial planning for the accumulation years, retirement years, and estate distribution. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Do you have a car that you're trading in? How about an old truck or boat that's taking up space? Let WDIY help you get rid of unwanted vehicles and turn them into financial support for the station. It's a simple and easy process. We handle all the towing, title, and transfer, and it may be tax deductible. Turn your vehicle into the programs you love. To learn more, visit WDIY.org or call 610-694-8100, extension 7.
Welcome back, folks. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices, and we are talking about the qualified business income deduction tonight. Very complicated. We're still learning this, so I'm going to give you that caveat. There's just so much to understand. Bottom line, if you are someone who has a business or someone who's thinking about going into business this year, I suggest you meet with your CPA or tax preparer or tax consultant, enrolled agent, whomever that might be, to understand how this might apply to you. Typically, again, very simple. It can be very simple or it can be super, super complicated. The very simple is if you're married, filing joint, and your income's under 300 and the taxable income is under $315,000. That's under that phase out. Threshold income, they call it. If you're under 315, then you really don't have too much to worry about. If you're between 315 and 415,000, there's phase outs. It's very complicated. If you're over 415,000 and you're in a service business, you're not going to get the deduction. But if you're in a non-service business, you still will qualify for a deduction, but the calculation of that is varied depending on all of the things you might have. I mentioned W-2 income. I mentioned if you have assets. So let's see if I can talk about that for a minute. Thresholds in a nutshell. 20% of qualified business income or 20% of taxable income. Oh, here's the little caveat on the taxable income. 20% of taxable income after subtracting net capital gain income. So if your taxable income is $100,000, but $100,000 was capital gains, you have to subtract that. So now we're back to zero taxable income. So you can't even trust the words you read. If it says, oh, 20% of taxable income, I got it. But, oh, wait, it's taxable income after net capital gain income. So what basically the logic there is, the IRS doesn't want to give you a deduction for income that is already getting favorable tax treatment, because net capital gains typically have favorable tax treatment. Short-term capital gains don't, but it just says net capital gains is how we've read it. It's phased out if the taxable income exceeds that threshold amount I mentioned, a threshold income taxpayer, they call it. And the threshold income limit causes W-2 wages and unadjusted basis of depreciable property to factor into the allowed qualified business income deduction. And this is where it gets really, really complicated. So if you're in those phase-out ranges, you have to now look to say, what are my W-2 wages? And what if you say zero, Lori? They're zero. Well, so now you're thinking you might not qualify for a deduction if the W-2 wages are zero in that phase-out range. But there's another limit. If you don't have W-2 wages, they're going to let you use part of your, what is the UB? Let me just see what this UB, I wrote this down because I couldn't remember it. UBIA, unadjusted basis immediately after acquisition, unadjusted basis of assets. So they'll say, well, you might not have W-2 income, but you might have invested in a lot of equipment. So they're going to let you have 2.5% of that equipment, but immediately after acquisition. So you could have depreciated the whole thing. You still get to use that as part of in calculating this credit. And you also, if you do have W-2s, if you're going that route, then you only get 25% of the W-2 wages. So it's the greater of 50% of the W-2 wages for business or 25% of W-2 wages plus 2.5% of this unadjusted basis of these assets immediately after acquisition. So then you have that number. Then you have to compare. It's the lower of, you know, this one and this one, and it just gets very complicated. But bottom line, if you're in those phase-out ranges or over those phase-out ranges, but in a non-service business, you probably will get some deduction allowed without regard to the taxpayer's taxable income. For the service businesses, some of this still applies between those thresholds, but once over, I mentioned there's no deduction. But in between those thresholds, they have different limits than the non-service people between those thresholds. It's just very complicated. You're going to have to use software. So the software might calculate those numbers for us, but the software isn't necessarily going to know what we have to do for planning. As I mentioned, what might be some planning things that people do? You might want to throw extra income on your return through a conversion, or if you're a partnership or an S-corp, because guess what, folks? This applies to those flow-throughs. If you remember at the top of the show, I said this isn't going to apply to C-corporations. It's going to apply to people who have Schedule C self-employment, sole proprietor type of income, partnership income, and S-corporation income, pass-through income. It's not going to apply to those wages that we have from our S-corp, though. So wages don't come into this calculation except to lower certain kind of business income we have. So very complicated. I can't get into all of that. But these this qualified business income to deduction could be available for people who are sole proprietors, partners, or S corporations. How is someone who has a flow through business, being a partnership or an S corp, so you get K-1s showing what your income is or what the profits are from the S corp, how are they going to know how to do this? Well, what we have learned is that the preparers of the returns for the partnerships and the S corporations are going to have to help identify what kind of income is flowing through from those businesses. Is it service income? Is it non-service business type income? I, as a tax preparer, don't necessarily always know exactly what kind of income someone might have from a partnership or an S corporation. Whoever's preparing those returns is now going to have to answer those questions and identify it somehow in the software, such that when my partner or my shareholder of those S corporations get those K-1s and the income from those K-1s, we're going to have to know, what kind of income is this? Is it service income? Is it non-service income? Then, again, the tax preparer for those entities aren't going to know necessarily what those individual partners or shareholders have on their own personal tax returns. They're not going to know if their income is over certain thresholds or if they're going to qualify for the qualified business income deduction. Because just because you're preparing the tax return for the entity doesn't mean you're preparing the tax return for those individuals who get those K-1s. So the preparer of the partnership and the S-Corp is going to have to identify what kind of income it is. And because they don't know what thresholds they might be subject to, they're also going to have to tell us, what are the assets that we can use for this partner or for this S-Corporation shareholder? What are the assets if I have to use those, if they're in those phase-out ranges or over those thresholds, over the $415,000 threshold, and I have those other limitations apply? I'm going to have to know what kind of income, what kind of assets, what kind of W-2 wages, and how are they allocated to my partner. If my partner is, you know, a 25% partner, then they're going to have 25% of those totals flow through on their K-1, which then, if I'm preparing the tax return for that individual partner, that will come into those calculations. Crazy stuff. Crazy stuff. So again, those threshold income based on taxable income, $315,000 married filing joint, or $157,005 otherwise. And the phase out ends at $415,000 married filing joint, or $207,500 otherwise. And again, over the phase out has other limitations for non-service businesses. For service businesses, you're out of luck. You don't get the deduction. And then the last part is, this is a deduction. It's not a reduction in self-employment income. So if you make $100,000 Schedule C and you're thinking you're getting this 20% deduction, and oh, goody, goody, I'm only paying my self-employment tax on $80,000, that's not the case. You're still paying your self-employment tax on your net profit. The deduction is comes after your adjusted gross income. It's a reduction of your income. All right. So it is not going to lower your self-employment tax. It will not lower the amount you can contribute to your 401k if you're self-employed. That will be based on your business income as usual. This is simply a deduction against your page one income. It's a reduction in your page one income. Not a reduction in your self-employment income, not a reduction in what's subject to self-employment tax. Lots of new things for people who are in business. I think if someone really wanted to make this nice for businesses, they would have made this a heck of a lot easier. A heck of a lot easier, because a lot of our small businesses who are going to qualify for this, it's just a little bit too complicated. But for the most part, the easy part to remember is, if your income is below those $315,000 married filing joint, $157,500 for everyone else, chances are you're going to qualify for that qualified business income deduction if you in fact have trader business income. And there's all kinds of regulations defining what trader business income is. A big win, and I should have mentioned this at the top of the show, because for anyone who has rental properties, you're going to qualify for this deduction too. You got to remember who the administration is and how they love real estate and rental real estate. So people who have rental properties are going to qualify. That is deemed to be trader business income for these purposes, not for self-employment tax purposes, a rental property, but for these purposes, for the deduction. So if you have rental income of $20,000 and you're below these other thresholds I've mentioned, $20,000 times of profit on your rental property, 20%, you'll get a $4,000 deduction for your rental property. So that'll be a win for a lot of people who otherwise, you know, might not have expected that. All right, folks, that was a lot of information, as general as I could keep it without totally going into all the details. It's very complicated. If you have questions, you can always send those through the website at yourfinancialchoices.com. I'm sure we'll have shows on this as we go through and learn more after further regulations, after these proposed regulations. So I hope that helps. Next week, I'm talking about considerations in the transition from working to retirement. Thank you, Lori, for being here. Thank you, listeners, and Nate for calling in. Shondi, thanks for being here. Coming up next, we have Tom Druckenmiller with In the Tradition Folk Music. Remember, pay attention, be proactive, not reactive. Make the best of your financial choices and have a great week.